And there still are some little stories around that maybe have not been heard, but this is the day, September 29th, probably the biggest day of my life.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I figured we should have you on the day, you know, so we had to wait every year till it fell on a Sunday.
Yeah,
you know, there's the leap year and everything, so here we are together. So start at the beginning, and I want this to be the best telling ever of this story, okay, Dave?
Okay, you got it. Well, I went to London in 67. I took a ship because I was going to study at the University of Edinburgh. I wanted to study at Sussex, but it was full. I wanted to meet John. I felt I had some things that he should know. I'd been involved in an alpha wave, brainwave experiment, and I had some other ideas. So I talked to NEMS Enterprises when I got to London. I kind of talked my way to the top as a writer, although I'd only written for the school paper. And they took my ideas and said, well, we'll share those with John, but we really can't give you his phone number. So,
and let's back this up. This is in the year 1967.
67. So on the morning of today,
September 67, 29.
I went down to Weybridge, and I was afraid I was going to be, you know, arrested maybe. I don't know. So I walked through the gates. The gates didn't shut. I walked up to the house.
This is John Lennon's house.
Right, Kenwood Estates. And Dorothy, the housekeeper, I didn't know her name at the time, she stuck her head out of the window and said, can I help you? And I said, well, is John home? And she said, well, he's asleep. Can you come back a little later? And then I knew I was at least I was cool that far.
Yeah, you were in there.
So I went back to the station, drank a couple pots of tea, came back to the house, knocked on the door. She said he's still asleep, but I think it'd be okay if you wait in the garage. So she puts me in the garage with the Rolls Royce and brought me tea and biscuits. And I sat there for about 2 hours. I mean, you can imagine what it felt like.
Sure.
Peter Brown came out eventually and kind of sniffed around and asked what I was up to. And I showed him my jacket with John's face on the back that I'd embroidered. He said, well, I'll see what I can do. 5 minutes later, John walked out.
Today you would be on TMZ as a stalker.
You know, it was a simpler
it was
time
a different
then.
Time, right?
You know, it really was. I was a pretty polite, clean-cut kid.
Sure.
And John invited me in, and he was having breakfast. Cynthia was making eggs and tomatoes, and he was sitting alone at the table. So I came over with my notebooks, and I started telling him about meditation and the alpha waves and the brain waves. And he finished, and he says, hey, look, we have to go in to do the David Frost show. Would you like a lift? And I said, yeah. So we get in the limo with Peter Brown, and we drive about two blocks away to George's house, and George climbs in. And so it's like an hour in the car going into London for the David Frost program. And Peter dragged me out of the car into the studio. We sat in the back. This was when they were getting ready to go to India.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I realized that, you know, this was a very special time in their lives. Brian had died the month before, and there was no drugs, no drinking, there was nothing, just fish and chips. So the show finished. We get back in the car. I left my bag in the car, started driving, and I'd never been in a recording
studio.
Where
did you think you were going now?
I didn't really know, but they were talking about recording, so I figured it was going to be a session. So we got near wherever we were going, and I nudged John and kind of went, me? And he went, yeah, come on in. So I go in, and it's Ringo was already there. George, of course, was in the car. I met Mal. Neil Aspinall and George Martin, and they were playing back stuff for the upcoming Mystery Tour record.
Right.
And so I heard little bits of stuff while I was there from Mr. Mustard.
Me and Mr. Mustard back then in 1967?
In Cry Baby Cry.
Right.
And I heard Fool on the Hill. And that night, Ringo was, his job was to dial the radio.
That was his job?
Yeah, he was sitting at the radio dialing.
Ringo, your job tonight is to,
they wanted to
listen
get,
to the radio.
They wanted to add one more bit to Walrus.
Now, this was, they were mixing on the Walrus on this evening,
well,
right?
Well, it was, I heard almost everything.
Right.
In fact, at one point when they were playing it back, I heard the da 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 da. So I was very quiet. I didn't, you know.
Right, sure.
I had a moment to ask George, what are they saying? And he goes, everybody's got one. And then later on, everybody thought it was everybody's spot, but
right.
I knew.
You knew, you were
the
there.
Truth. So yeah, they dialed in the radio, and 6 months later, I'm up in Edinburgh studying Shakespeare, and guess what? I went, I've heard this before.
Now, for those of you, I'm sure you all know, but at the end of On the Walrus, you do hear a radio bit going on, and it was the tragedy of King Lear that Ringo found on the BBC. Mark, play a little bit of the tragedy.
So
this is what Ringo heard on the radio, right?
Yes.
Slave, thou hast slain me. Villain, take my purse. If ever thou wilt thrive, bury my body. And
Act four.
And we know all those
six.
Words like they're part of the song, practically,
yeah, yeah.
Right? So Ringo's going down the radio dial and they hear that. And what do they say? That sounds cool. Let's put it on the record.
Yeah. As far as I know, it was just flown in live off the air.
Did they mic the radio? Is that what they did? Or
I don't know. But I guess there was a track open.
Mm-hmm.
And that came in and it was done live. And it was kind of, I think John was instrumental in putting things together like this with a little bit of happenstance. And luck.
Right.
So that was it.
And Paul McCartney, was he at the studio that night?
Yeah, yeah. He was, we all had fish and chips together, my first time. And I remember Paul was wearing a floor-length black fur coat. They were all
Mark has one of those,
yeah.
Engineer Mark.
And everybody was there.
So, Engineer Mark, what do you think? College student goes to knock on John Lennon's door. John Lennon says, come on, we're going to the David Frost show, and then we're going back to EMI to do a little mixing, Mr. Banzai, huh?
I would have thought I was dreaming.
I did. Now, there's proof now. Now, of course, the follow-up to David is always, yeah, but can you prove it? And you can prove it because he has a page right here, Mark. You can verify this to the listeners at home. Autographs from all four Beatles with little comments about their day together. That he has on a notebook right here. Show Engineer Mark so he can tell the listeners that it's all true.
Yeah, it was very sweet. George wished me good luck at the University of Edinburgh. It really made me feel so good.
So, David, what did you think? I mean, you were as much a fan as anybody at the time, that the Beatles, embraced you, took you in a car, took you to a session. What did it say about them as people? Because, most fans would think this would never happen in a million years. Did it tell you something about just them as individuals, that they weren't frightened of you, that they kind of listened to what you had to say and thought, hey, this guy's all right?
I've thought about this a lot. I did try the legitimate route to meet them because I really thought it would be fun to share some of these ideas with John. And evidently he liked that. In retrospect, after we had our little breakfast meeting, speaking of breakfast,
mm-hmm.
and went on this 6 hour, 10 hour trip I had with them. I think maybe John wanted a witness, somebody who was not a member of the press, not a member of anybody official, just a student going off to school. And he opened the doors and for me, and they all opened their doors as well.
And this isn't unique to David's story, because if you watch the Imagine film, there's that guy that's kind of camping out in John's bushes in front of his house. And, John comes to the door, and the next thing he's having a little toast and tea with John and Yoko. So it's not unheard of.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy like that. And you looked like a pretty cool guy at the time. I've seen pictures of you. And
yeah, I wanted to get a Beatles haircut, but I was already
losing. It's too late now for that, isn't it?
I know.
Mr.
I was already losing my hair, and the barber said, you don't have enough.
Wow, that is quite a story. And if the listeners want to read any more details on this, or maybe I think you cut a little film with
if you go to my website, I did a Skype with Auntie Dot, and it was like a year ago, and her husband Bern.
And how old is she now?
93.
93.
And her husband died about 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
But he was 95. He was driving around, smoking like a chimney.
Mm-hmm.
Had dinner, went to bed. That was it.
Interesting.
So wow. Her story is very interesting, too.
So what do you say we play the song in question here? I'm the Walrus. David, thanks. Is that Peter Asher you're looking at over my shoulder?
Hello, Peter.
Hey, Peter Asher, what's happening?
Hey, gentlemen, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
95.5 KLOS, back with Peter Asher and more Beatles. Stick around.
There you go, Peter and Gordon. I don't want to see you again. I told you it was a good record, didn't I? This is Paul McCartney. Thanks for listening.
And thank you, Paul, for the nice intro. That was indeed the fabulously handsome and talented Peter and Gordon doing I Don't Want to See You Again. And before that, we heard If I Fell by the Beatles. Do You Want to Know a Secret by the Beatles? Rock Show from Wings. And we started with Honey Pie by the Beatles, a great old musical-sounding track, which I really like. This is Peter Asher, and I'll be back with my fabulous guest, Chris Carter, very shortly. You're listening to 95.5 KLOS.
You are switched on and tuned in to America's longest-running Beatles show, Breakfast with the Beatles.
You better free your mind instead.
Now, here's your host, Chris Carter.
Yes, indeed. I'm here. Thanks for hanging with us on your Sunday morning. We'd like to welcome back to Breakfast with the Beatles, Margaret Asher's little boy, Peter Asher.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
It's always a pleasure to be here. Good morning.
Nice read back on that last set,
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I've always wanted to, you know, have somebody fill in for me if I go on vacation or something. I think, you know, you might be the man, Peter.
I would be honored should that opportunity ever arise.
That would make my mom and dad happy if I came home for Christmas this year. Do you stay in town during Christmas season?
I do, yes.
Oh, you do?
I stay here for Christmas, yes.
Write that down, Engineer Mark. Peter Asher. Pencil him in for the last Sunday in December.
You got it.
So, Peter, you're back with your very own one-man show called Peter Asher, a musical memoir of the 60s and beyond. Have you updated it a bit?
Yes. I continue to add bits and pieces and update it. I mean, people ask me, well, when's it going to be a completely new show? And the answer to that is, well, I guess in about 50 years, but yeah. I've got another five decades of stories to tell. But in the meantime, yeah, people, you know, I learn bits and new bits of information. We find a bit of new video, or I take things out, put things in, because, you know, if I put everything in, the thing could go on for bloody ever. So,
exactly.
So I want to keep it a modest length and keep it interesting. But yeah, it's the same show. I'm not pretending it isn't, but it's always a bit different. We change stuff.
Now, you weren't one to collect things over the years. I know I've talked to you about this before.
Sadly, I wasn't. No,
but you do have to gather things for this show.
It was
show,
a question
right?
of reassembling things. I mean, as you know, as we've talked about before, some people like Bill Wyman keep everything and are amazing.
Now, he's crazy, right? I mean, he has like stuff down his cellar, right?
I'll tell you a story. I was having dinner with Bill at his house, and we were reminiscing about a tour that we did with them, with the Peter and Gordon and the Stones. It was Peter and Gordon the Stones and Freddie and the Dreamers and Millie Small was the tour. And
Millie Small, of course, the headliner on that tour.
No, but here's what's interesting. Freddie and the Dreamers were the headliner. Because the Stones had only had one hit. And anyway, we were talking about the tour, and Bill said, just a minute, ran downstairs, came back with a ticket and a program. So he not only has everything, but he knows where it is.
And there was a girl down there that he picked up that night that was still downstairs.
No.
Interesting. So you're having dinner at Bill Wyman's house, huh? That's interesting. Just in itself.
Yeah, they're friends of my wife and I. They're great.
Was he the closest Stone that you knew? Of the Stones?
Back then, I probably knew Mick and Brian a bit better, but I got to know Bill gradually over the years. And I see Bill quite often. When Suzanne, his wife, is a great friend of my wife, Wendy, so we see each other pretty often. But I see Mick from time to time. Gordon and Brian were good friends. They were like drinking buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And and Keith I've hung out with from time to time. It's sort of mixed.
Of course, we're talking about your former partner, Gordon Waller.
Indeed, yes.
Who, my goodness, it was how many years before you guys got back together? Like 38 years,
yeah.
That Mike Smith benefit?
We never exactly stopped officially or broke up. You know, there wasn't like, this is our last show.
Just couldn't find him for 38 years.
No. You could find him, and then something you were sorry
it's
you
the
did.
The pub you could find him at.
Exactly. But yes, and then we got back together at Paul Schaefer's instigation for a benefit for Mike Smith.
Right.
And that's what got us back together. And since that went okay, then we did a few more gigs because people seemed to like it.
Now, why had it been so long? I mean, this is something you probably thought about a million times, right?
Well, we've been asked frequently. But to be honest, I was kind of busy. I mean, I started doing all this other stuff, managing and producing. And
creating the California sound of the 70s. There's a lot of things to do for you.
Thank you. And so it just didn't seem like the right thing to do. But then when Paul asked, it just was the right confluence of circumstances. You know, we loved Mike Smith. He was a great friend of Gordon's. Paul's such a cool guy. You knew he'd put a great band together. The whole thing was like, okay, I can't say no to this one. So we didn't.
Now, one of the cool things that popped up, I guess was maybe last year when you were doing the show, was this demo that you came up with. Tell us about it.
Well,
from Paul McCartney.
Yeah, when Paul, you know the story that, you know, we got a record deal. I went back to Paul and asked him about this song that I'd heard before, because he and I were sharing the top floor of our house. I'd heard this song, Well Without Love. And
he just says that casually, because, you know, Paul McCartney was living in my house. Anyway.
And so I asked him if we could do the song. He said yes. He gave me the lyrics. He wrote out the lyrics, which I still have stayfully stashed away. And what I vaguely remembered is he also did a quick demo of one verse just so we would get the melody right, which he did, as I recall, on my reel-to-reel. We both had reel-to-reel tape machines in our respective rooms next to each other. And I think he did it on mine, so any complaints about the recording quality can be addressed directly to me. But... And I wasn't sure what had happened to the tape, because I'd lost a lot of those old reel-to-reel tapes. But then
Bill Wyman had it in his basement.
Probably. Then I found a box of DATs, if you remember DATs.
Yes, absolutely.
And I remembered that I'd actually transferred those reel-to-reel tapes to DAT.
Everybody was doing that in the 90s.
At the time when DAT was the newest,
yeah, they were transferring everything onto DATs. Yeah.
So I found these DATs and wasn't sure what was on them. And luckily at Hans Zimmer's, where I have an office and work a lot with Hans, somebody had a DAT machine that actually worked.
That didn't break.
And we played these and found the original Paul McCartney demo of Well Without Love. And I went, oh, that's cool. We'll throw that in. So that ended the show.
Well, we should play it real quick. It's not very long. Like you said, Paul just wanted to give you...
just the first verse. First of all, all he'd written was two verses. There was no bridge yet. And all he was really concerned about was that we'd get the melody, learn the melody, which we did.
And again, you can marvel at the Peter Asher production on this number, because he really was working that reel to reel. Here's Paul McCartney's little demo found by Peter Asher.
Please lock me away. The day here inside where I hide with my loneliness. I don't care what you say, I'll be dead in a world without love.
That was the tune.
That was the
Paul
tune.
McCartney.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. So, what was it like when you first realized you had this? I mean, how did you? You didn't know you had it, right?
No, I didn't know I had it. I thought it was cool. I went, no, that's cool.
Thank God you're not auctioning it off or anything like that. Too.
No, hasn't not yet. You never know.
Let's just go back to sharing, you know, the upstairs flat there with Paul McCartney. This is at what period? This is like 64, 65?
I'm terrible at dates, but I suppose so, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the height of Beatlemania.
They were on the road a lot, so it was just whenever he was in London.
But he'd come home.
He would. That was his sort of pied-a-terre, was the guest room at the top floor of our house.
Now, did the fans know he was there?
They did, and that was...
Because he's dating your sister at the time.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And my father, you know, was a doctor. The house is in Wimpole Street, you know, that old Wimpole Street, Harley Street area, is all doctors. So he saw patients in his consulting rooms on the ground floor. So it was a bit weird when patients would arrive and there'd be a crowd of girls on the doorstep and none of them knew why.
None of the girls ever figured out to make believe they were sick so they could see your father to get in the house?
That's a good point. I don't think they did.
It took me 1 minute to think that. Those Apple scruffs weren't thinking too clearly then.
That's right.
Let's play the finished version of A World Without Love.
Okay, thanks.
Got to number one in the UK, February 1964. Got to number one here in the States a few months later June of 1964.
Despite Bobby Rydell covering it.
That's right. Here you go. Peter and Gordon, 95.5 KLOS. Yeah. A little Peter, a little Gordon for your Sunday morning right here on Breakfast with the Beatles, 95.5 KLOS and KLOS HD1, Los Angeles. A Lennon-McCartney tune. Now, if you flip this record over, Peter, you get a great track called If I Were You that you guys wrote.
We did, yes. Thank you for liking it. That's
and I have to say, you know, I know Lennon McCartney were, you know, writing songs for you, but this song, I love this song. I would have made this the A-side if I was at Columbia Records back in 1964, but I know?
That's very flattering.
Do you remember writing this song?
Yes, I do, yes. We just really started writing together and this was a very early one, and we thought it was pretty cool, so we did it for the B-side and included an oboe solo in honor of my mother, who was an oboe player and teacher.
Brilliant. Let's listen together. Peter and Gordon, 95.5 KLOS. Peter and Gordon, the flip side of A World Without Love, If I Were You, written by Peter and Gordon themselves, as we hang with Peter Asher, who's got a show going down at the Grammy Museum coming up Saturday, October 12th. Two shows, Peter. Nice.
Yep, an afternoon and evening, 2 and 7.
Yeah, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. And if you're down around San Diego, you catch the show October 5th at the Acoustic Music San Diego Theater, we'll call it. Theater makes it sound, you know, bigger, Peter. And that is going down on October 5th.
The Acoustic Arena.
Yeah, the Acoustic Amphitheater Dome. Yeah, exactly.
Stadium.
Stadium. Hey, there you go. You can't top the stadium. Arena? Maybe that could top the stadium. So, hey, how about the loss of our friend Jackie Lomax? Did you know Jackie?
Yes, of course. I hadn't seen
a lot of
him. Of
course you did. You probably signed him.
I was involved in, I mean, George was one, as you know, who found him.
Yeah.
But I went to several of those sessions, you know, that they, when they were doing...
Now, did you know about the Undertakers? Or did you know about his band before?
Yes. Yeah, I'd heard of them, but I didn't know much about them, but George did. And Jackie was a terrific singer, and he will be missed.
Yeah, he lived... out there in Ojai, and
yes,
you know,
apparently I hadn't, unfortunately, you know, I'm in Malibu, so we weren't far apart, but I hadn't seen him. But I as I say, I went to several of those recording sessions that George was producing, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, he was the very first guest we had on Breakfast with the Beatles when I assumed the role of the host. And
fantastic.
Yeah, great guy. He was like the mayor of Ojai. He'd walk around with his cool cowboy hat. You know, he looked like a real outlaw.
Fantastic.
Very neat. So Paul McCartney played in town this week. Closed down Hollywood Boulevard on Monday night.
Yeah, I was away, but I was hearing about that. Yeah, amazing.
Pretty insane. Yeah. And then he was on stage in Santa Monica with Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson doing a little Two Men of Verona, which he was like, you know, he had the script in his hand for 2 hours, and then he would do songs. Apparently Tom Hanks decided, you know, the play needed some Beatles songs.
Yeah.
So he picked which ones would fit. Of course, all plays need some Beatles songs. Every play needs Paul McCartney to come out and just, you know,
sing,
live, and
let die.
It's just
a pity Shakespeare never met at the time. You know, they could have collaborated on a musical.
So have you heard Paul's new single?
I have. It's really cool. And Mark Ronson did it, who's a friend and someone I greatly admire. So it's very cool.
Yeah, and you worked with four producers on this record, which is kind of new for Paul.
Yes.
And you as a... as a producer, a lot of people, I'm sure they do know, after your days of, you know, gigging with Peter and Gordon and A&Ring at Apple Records, you became quite the producer in your own right.
That's what I still do to this day and very much enjoy.
Yeah, you're working on that new Elton John.
Yeah, it's a Goodbye Yellow Brick Road sort of tribute thing with a bunch of different cool artists. Miguel has done a track for me, Fallout Boy, Ed Sheeran, Emily Sandé, all kinds of great people.
And Elton contacted you about
this? Yes, he did.
Very interesting. So you're going to do like one album's worth? It's
we've
a double
done nine,
album.
We've done nine songs. We've done half the. I'd love to have done them all, but the record company didn't want that. They wanted
they just wanted the short version of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
So, but it's going to be part of the big re-release fancy deluxe package at the beginning of next year.
Very cool.
And I just finished it actually yesterday. I'm going to see Elton's show in Vegas on Wednesday and give him a finished CD at the same time.
Well, you tell him me and Mark said hello, all right?
I will indeed.
Let's play the brand new Paul McCartney song, the above mentioned. It's cleverly titled New. Here's Paul McCartney on Breakfast with Your Beatles. Turn it up. Title track from Paul McCartney's upcoming album called New, in shops in about 2.5 weeks. This is album number 143 for Paul McCartney. Very, very busy as we hang with Peter Asher. That's a nice track, huh, Peter?
Really good. And we all love the Beach Boys at the end. It's great.
Yeah, really good. And he didn't do that part at the end on Monday night. I was a little disappointed. I was ready to harmonize with him, and he didn't do it. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more Peter Asher, back with more Beatles. Stick around.
Here's Peter and Gordon for McLean's.
It's McLean's, the toothpaste that cleans with a new kind of taste that is wild. What a taste, what a zing. When you smile, all the bells ring. Get them white, irresistibly white. Start with McLean's. So white with McLean's.
This is Homer Simpson, and you're listening to Breakfast with the B-Sharps and your host, Chris Cartridge, right here on 95.5 KLOS.
Oh, didn't have Babies on Board at the end. I got confused. We're back with Peter Asher, original A&R man for Apple Records.
It's true.
signed James Taylor. So that was neat to hear that little spot.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard that before. I guess Capitol must have done that when they put the Apple album out.
He's
amazing.
Somewhat tall.
Somewhat tall. It's a heavy thing, whatever. Yeah, that's cool.
Tell us about James Taylor back in 1969, what that was all about. Because, you know, of course he went on to becoming, you know, the guy we all know and love. But back then...
Well, we did the Apple album, yeah, in London. You know, I that's where James and I met. We found each other in London through our mutual friend Danny Korchmar, who's a great guitar player, who introduced us. And... So James and I became friends, and it so happened that I just got this new job as head of A&R for a label. So we had this kind of bizarre conversation where I kind of went, you know, these are great songs, you're really good, you know, I just got a new job, you want a record deal? And he said, yes, please, and that was that. And within 2 or 3 days, I was introducing him to the Beatles, and he was the first artist to actually sign to Apple.
Right.
But, yeah, he was a somewhat troubled young man, you know, but as far as I was concerned, one of the best songwriters and guitar players and singers that I've ever heard in my life. And I was super impressed.
And you worked with him after Apple.
I remain so to this day.
Of course.
Well, then I took him off Apple, became his manager, and we decided to go back to America. I kind of bet my career on his and moved back to America, made a deal with Warner Brothers, and we went in the studio and I produced the next album, which turned out to be Sweet Baby James, and everything got crazy.
So really, you get the credit for making James Taylor a household name.
Well, I think James Taylor gets the credit for that.
No, you get the credit, Peter Asher, okay?
I'll take my share.
Without you, we might not have heard from James Taylor.
Well, I'll take some of the credit. Thank you very much. I'll take whatever I can get.
Back in the day when you were an A&R man over at Apple, did you know Frida Kelly at all?
No, actually, we met at events or something, but I didn't really know. I think she was more kind of Liverpool.
Yeah, she was the Liverpool end of things.
I was never there, you know.
Right.
I was hardly ever in Liverpool. So we must have met at a couple of events, but I didn't really get to know her. No, I hear that the film is...
You haven't seen the film?
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, it's really interesting.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, you'll get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
You know what? I have a James Taylor song queued up here.
Okay.
Called Something in the Way She Moves. Of course, we heard that
a catchy line later.
Produced by Peter Asher. It's just a perfect Sunday morning song, so let's play it. Here's James Taylor, 95.5 KLOS, produced by Peter Asher. 95.5 KLOS Breakfast with the Beatles. George Harrison borrowing a line there from James Taylor. We heard Something from our featured album of the morning, Abbey Road, out this week in 1969. And then James Taylor, Something in the Way She Moves from his debut Apple long player, produced by our guest, Peter Asher. Sounds nice on the headphones after all these years.
Yes, I don't listen to that stuff much. It's great to hear it. James sounds so incredibly young. It's amazing.
How often do you listen to your work? Like, you know, Linda Ronstadt albums that you produce, James Taylor.
I would say never deliberately. I mean, it's always fun when you get to hear it for some reason like this, you know, but do I actually go and put one of those records on to listen to? No.
Why is that, though? I mean, you obviously were close to them. Is it because you were so close to them?
I suppose you get so involved and, you know, with every detail of it, once the record's done, you kind of go, okay, that's delivered and done, and you feel like you know it by heart. But what's interesting is when you do hear it, there are things that you've forgotten about, and it also brings back particular memories of the recording session.
Right. We have a listener with a question on line number 4 or something like that, Mark.
I'm
not quite sure. Are you there, listener?
Yes.
What's your name?
This is Beetle Nettie.
Beetle at Nettie.
Nettie? Hi, Nettie.
Hi, Peter. You're a wonderful producer.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you so much.
I had a question.
Yep.
I heard that the band, that Apple tried to get them onto Apple Records, and it didn't work out.
We did. I'm not sure that that's absolutely correct. I remember going in the studio with them, with Andy Johns engineering and produce, and doing a couple of tracks with them. I don't remember what songs they were, but we were trying to get them signed. I don't exactly know what happened, why we didn't, because I loved them. It wasn't a question of did we want them. We absolutely did. So I honestly don't know what happened from a business point of view. Probably, you know, Atlantic, I guess, got them in the end, I think. I loved the band. I'd seen them play live in London at a club or something. Did cut some stuff in the studio with them, and we tried to sign them. It's all true.
There you go, Nettie. How about that?
That's interesting. Do you know anything about the Lord of the Rings acquisition?
There was always rumors, you know, different films the Beatles wanted to obtain rights to.
It was, I don't know about the acquisition, but did we have a discussion? There were two separate discussions about potential Beatle movies that I remember. One was that we were all huge fans of The Prisoner, So Patrick McGoohan, who was the star of that and he invented that whole show, I remember he came in for a meeting with the Beatles because as to whether he would come up with some genius idea, because we all thought The Prisoner was so cool. And the other one, yes, was there was some discussion about Lord of the Rings with the Beatles as the Hobbits. And I'm not sure what happened to that either. But
that would have changed history, though.
Yes,
huh?
It would. Changed the tone of the Lord of the Rings forever.
And but, the way we looked at the Beatles.
Exactly. But there was that. I do remember some discussions on that topic.
And John wanted to play Gandalf. Fans speculate, you know, maybe George would be Saruman. You know, they think about things like that.
All right, Nettie, we're getting a little too crazy now, okay?
I don't know.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you. Thanks.
There you go. Beatlet Nettie with a question.
Yes, absolutely.
So, we're talking about you as a producer, and of course you produced Ringo Starr, a couple of tracks. And I want to play one of them right now that was written by a band called the Posies. This one's called Golden Blunders. Tell me about this one.
I just remember I liked the song a lot, and so did Ringo. I'm trying to remember the session. This will be one I haven't heard since I did it.
I love it.
So it'll be very interesting to hear it, and it'll remind me like who played on it and stuff.
Let's listen together.
It's going to come back to me.
Here's Ringo Starr, produced by Peter Asher, right here on Breakfast with the Beatles.
I know Ringo played drums on this.
A little Ringo Starr for your Sunday morning, produced by our guest Peter Asher from an album called Time Takes Time. Golden Blunders from 1992. Nice lineup on that track, too, Peter. You had Waddy Wattell on guitar, Andrew Gold, the late Andrew Gold on acoustic guitar, Rob Glob on bass, Robbie Buchanan keyboards, and Peter Asher, tambourine and backing vocals.
Oh, there you go. Yes, I was trying to remember exactly who was on it, listening to it. Yeah. I haven't heard that since we did
that. Was just off the top of my head, too, that lineup.
Your memory's astounding.
That's right. Hey, we want to say hi to Beth, Beatlet Beth, who is listening on hold, Peter. She wanted to hear you so badly.
Is Beth in Canada?
Yeah, so she's listening on hold. We put her on hold, and she can hear the show.
Hi, Canadian Beth. I'm sorry I can't hear you, but I'm glad you're listening.
She's in Vancouver, so there you go, Beth. Also on the line, a surprise special guest, Peter.
Okay.
It's Paul McCartney's. That's what he calls himself on that ID. Come on, I was imitating Paul. I can say Paul McCartney, no problem. Rusty Anderson.
Hello. Are you there?
Hello.
What's happening?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you,
hi,
Rusty. Say hi to Peter Asher.
Hi, Rusty.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Just fine.
So what's happening, Rusty? You have some big news to share with our listeners?
Yeah, well, just between you and me, actually. Don't tell anybody.
All right, it's a secret.
Yeah, it's a secret. Now, I have, we're doing a charity event for the new signature Gibson guitar that's just out now. And it's going to be in Los Angeles, and it should be really fun. We're playing my band, Rusty Anderson Afternoon, and...
tell us about this new guitar, though, Rusty. Are you being shy?
Am I being shy?
Yeah, tell us about the guitar.
It's really cool. I mean, we've been working on it, Gibson and I, for a couple of years. You know, it's been a long time in the making, and they really, really came to the table with some cool stuff, and we, you know, went back and forth, and it's a great guitar. It's very light. It's a 335, the blonde one. It's basically a sort of a reissue of the 59 that I've been playing for, you know, since like 2003 or something.
So this is an official, like, Rusty Anderson guitar.
Exactly.
See how modest he is? He can't come out and say it. It's my own guitar with my name on it. I'll say it for you, Rusty.
That's the thing to fellow, I'm sorry. Something like you to explain it to the people.
Hey, but, you guys were great on Monday night closing down Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, that's the last time I saw you.
Yeah, did you dig that kind of a show? I mean, that's like a special thing, you know? I mean, that was a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a few of those kind of, you know, things out on the street before, and I'm really glad because, you know, to have a few under your belt just to kind of get used to the format. But it's, you know, doing it in your own hometown, you know, because I grew up in L.A., and that was really a special trip, you know, like...
Used to play on Hollywood Boulevard with your guitar sitting on, you know, with the little hat with the change and everything. So this is a big switch for you now, you know, on stage like that.
Oh, crazy. I mean, there's people way up high. Like, you look up and tops of buildings and down the streets. And, you know, I couldn't really see the end of it. It was really cool.
It was a great show, and you guys did a wonderful job, so congratulations. Is there a website you can direct the listeners to go to, find out more about your performance and your guitar?
Yeah, it's rustyanderson.eventbrite.com. And that's the place where you can, you know, get tickets for it. And you can also go to my Facebook or my website. If you look on the affairs of my website, just rustyanderson.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's this Thursday at 7, and it's going to be really fun. I might have some friends come up and jam.
Ah.
You know, it's also a charity event for the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is one of my favorite charities. They're, you know, an environmental climate shift kind of.
Yeah, and right. In D.C. They're great.
Yeah.
Well, very good, Rusty Anderson. Let's all hear it for Rusty, ladies and gentlemen. That was a surprise. Rusty Anderson on the phone.
Good to
We're
going
to play a track from Monday night's show. Is that cool with you?
Sorry?
We're going to play a song from Monday night's performance. Is that all right? Do I have your permission?
You have my permission, yes.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Rusty Anderson and his band featuring Paul McCartney live on Hollywood Boulevard. 95.5 KLOS. Turn it up. Yes, indeed. Rusty Anderson and his band featuring Paul McCartney live on Hollywood Boulevard. Just a few nights ago, Junior's Farm, as we hang with the great Peter Asher. Let's do another quiz real quick, Engineer Mark. 800-955-KLOS. All right, this gets yourself a pair of tickets to see Brian Wilson and Jeff Beck October 20th at the Greek Theater. And I believe Peter Asher has been kind enough to throw in a pair of tickets to see his one-man show called A Musical Memoir of the 60s and Beyond. It's going down at the Grammy Museum. Is that where these tickets are for, the Grammy Museum?
That's right. There's two shows, afternoon and evening, at the Grammy Museum on the 12th. Yes.
All right, so you get to see Brian Wilson, Jeff Beck, and Peter Asher.
And a consolation prize. You get to see me as well.
No way. It's a great package.
No, I'm a huge fan of Jeff Beck and Brian Wilson, so I'll go for those tickets.
All right. Let's see. Well, maybe you can win this quiz.
I doubt it.
Our number.
I don't remember anything. Go ahead.
800-955-KLOS. Here you go. Ready? You can't Google this question. How many songs from the Abbey Road album have we played this morning here on Breakfast with the Beatles? How many songs from the Abbey Road album, our featured album of the morning? How many songs have we played from 9 a.m. to right now? 800-955-KLOS. We'll be back with more Peter Asher. Stick around.
Groovy, fab, hey, great. Hey, this is Dirk McQuickley. You're listening to Breakfast with the Beatles with Chris Carter. Hey, great, fab.
We are back. 95.5 KLOS Breakfast with the Beatles. Dirk McQuickley just kind of ends fast. You just don't know it's over. We want to congratulate Beatle Rob from La Habra. He won the contest. How many songs had we played from the Abbey Road album? The answer, 9. Congratulations, Rob. You're going to see Brian Wilson and Jeff Beck and Peter Asher at the Grammy Museum. Nice going there, buddy. I want to thank Engineer Mark. Great job behind the board today, Mark. Jackie DeShannon for this week's Beatle News. Assistant Louise for answering those phones. Keith Putney. I was going to say forgetting Peter here, but you didn't do that. Jeeves, his limo driver, got him here. So thanks to all of you. Peter Asher, thank you, my friend.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much, Chris and Mark and everybody. Thank you.
You can catch Peter again at the Grammy Museum here in Los Angeles, Saturday, October 12th. Two shows, one at 2 p.m. and another at 7 p.m. And if you're down around the San Diego area, catch the show October 5th at the Acoustic Music San Diego Amphitheater Arena. All right. So, Peter, if you had to pick one Beatles song to close this edition of Breakfast with the Beatles, what might it be?
Well, I know it might be hipper to pick something obscure, but to be honest, I'll go with the Hey Jude. I'll go with an obvious choice. It's just such a great song to end a show with, and it's one that I was fortunate enough to be there for at Trident Studios when they finished it, and I heard it for the first time on Trident's gigantic speakers, and it's needless to say, it has stuck with me.
For all these years. Thanks again, Peter Asher. Again, next Sunday here on Breakfast with the Beatles, Tim Piper and the band going to do some Lennon tunes on our special Lennon edition. October 13th, Larry Kane, and November 3rd, Julian Lennon in studio. My name is Chris Carter, and it's been a pleasure playing Beatles for you.